Off the Ball. GAA.
It all depends on fitness, and it's a lot with the club, you know. Brian Stack is like the master key. He can do a lot of jobs there. And if he's out, you know, there's a lot of fires to put out as well.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
You ain't shit!
I wish I was 50 years younger and I'd kick your ass.
Well, fans can be the harshest critics, you know.
And they often are.
A wife is often the harshest critic of her husband.
I thought I was invincible. That's what you're trained to believe as a sports person.
There was 4 million people in Ireland who knew much more about managing football teams than I did. When it comes to music, I can spoof with the best.
Your sporting career is the best time you'll have, and, you know, you have to hang on to it for as long as your life, because everything else is pretty crappy.
And this is not lies. Stephen Rothschild has never spoken to Jim McGuinness in his life.
Welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to 8 on this extended show, because we're bringing a commentary live and exclusive of Leinster versus La Rochelle in the Investec Champions Cup later on. You can WhatsApp us 0879 180 180. Still in the FA Cup, Crystal Palace, the holders, 1-0 down at Macclesfield. There you go. Everton at the moment as well. And they are 1-0 down at home to Sunderland. Cheltenham 0, Leicester City 2, and Wolves 4 now. Shrewsbury 1. So Wolves getting a bit of respite after their terrible Premier League season. This is the Saturday panel. We are bringing you a simple theme today, because between now and 2:35, we're going to review the sporting week, talk about the topics in sport that are exercising people's minds, and maybe having a look ahead to the year and what's ahead. We are delighted to have in studio the Virgin Media Television presenter and Irish Examiner columnist Tommy Martin, and the chief executive of Tenio Ireland, a global CEO advisory firm, Mick O'Keefe, who also lined out at one stage for the Dublin Senior Footballers. Tommy and Mick, you're both very welcome to the programme.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, John. Great to be here.
Tommy, this is big news for you today, because your Examiner column is now on a Saturday. So it's on a different day of the week.
The big PR campaign that accompanied it. I mean, you just couldn't avoid it. I know, yeah, just throw my week up in the air. Friday mornings used to be, you know, get up, have a nice coffee, go to the gym. Yeah.
What did you write about today?
You can't look the Man U gift horse in the mouth if you're a columnist. It's like, first column of the year, what are you going to write about? Cheers.
Dysfunction.
Thanks, Man U. So, yeah, I just had a feeling about, you know, it's been teased out a lot this week. The whole, it's been a kind of a milestone week in terms of the topic of who's in charge at the big football clubs, and the new world where the managers are front and centre. They do all the press conferences, but are they making the big decisions? And I think it obviously came to it sort of came to crystallise with the Enzo Maresca one at Chelsea. Mm. He sort of was, you know, brought in as part of that sort of, you know, five-headed sort of team of directors of football that they have behind the scenes there. Won the Club World Cup. I think the reading the report, he went in and said, I want a bit more power. And by the way, I've been having a chat to Man City, and sort of upset the apple cart there. And that, you know, relationship came to an end. Ruben Amorim then, I mean, like that boiled up. It was the first sign most of us knew that there was trouble there, is when he made that point about, I'm the manager, not the head coach. And everybody sort of went, actually, no, you are the head coach. And that came, as we know now, after the big bust up with Jason Wilcox, the, you know,
the Lex Luthor of Manchester United. I mean, like, you know.
But, and now we know that Jason Wilcox has basically got Big Jim Radcliffe on the phone, okay. You know, and Big Jim Radcliffe is watching Gary Neville.
Get a boom on there and then.
And yeah, and it's just this mad chain of sort of who's actually in charge here. And obviously Amorim, you know, so you're thinking there, you're looking at Man United, and that led into then, it's okay, we're panic stations, we've sacked the manager, let's bring in a bit of Fergie era nostalgia. That's United's sort of go-to thing.
So that wheel.
It'll just calm everything down, and like it's like, you know, it's like a sort of a little bit of opium for the Man United, just to kind of bliss out then on, you know, of some old clips of Ollie, or, you know, like even the, before they got Ollie, they're like, let's do like 5 days of Darren Fletcher, you know, it's not quite the sort of, but he's, you know, he make us feel good for a few days.
Macclesfield are 2-0 up on Crystal Palace. That is the, I mean, the talk about the magic of the FA Cup being gone is back right today. The holders 2-0 down to Macclesfield.
Maybe Oliver Glasner might be available sooner rather than later. Ollie, hold that thought, Ollie.
Like, Oliver Glasner could have been the front runner, and now look at their...
Yeah,
the Brains Trust are looking at the TV screen there.
Radcliffe is on the phone now to Wilcox. Get me the Macclesfield manager. So, but then it did make me think about the fact that, you know, it's the new way of doing things in football, is because it's become such a big industry that you can't have the old style Fergie, the guy with the rolling, you know, the contacts book, and he picks up the phone and he basically runs the whole club top to bottom. It needs to, you need to have different departments and structures and recruitment and analysis and sports science, etc., etc. But I still think even in the modern era, you do need a figure who makes the decisions, who the buck rests with, and, you know, the clubs who have been successful in the last decade in England, certainly Manchester City and Liverpool, yes, they've had very well structured football operations, but they have all, everything they've done, you know, in City, it was Abu Dhabi's billions with a really good setup from top to bottom, but it was done under Pep Guardiola's vision. Like, he was the sort of, you know, the creative genius behind the whole thing, and the structure made it happen. You know, and I don't think anything really major would have happened there without his say. So I'm sure there were decisions about players and, you know, borderline things that maybe he had to give way on. Similarly with Klopp, the Liverpool of the last decade until he left was clearly a reflection of Klopp's personality. And clearly, you know, again, they had a structure around recruitment. We know that from, you know, the Ian Abrams book and different, you know, insights into how they've done their recruitment. But it was always a sense that it was Klopp's. They were implementing Klopp's vision for how the team wanted to play. Cut to Ruben Amorim sitting in a room. Now, as it has been pointed out, Ruben Amorim has hardly made a case for him, an indefensible case for himself, but he's getting questioned by Jason Wilcox about what he's doing, who's got Jim Ratcliffe on his back, who's got the CEO, Omar Barada, has got his back. We hear about a WhatsApp message from the head of recruitment, Vivel, watching one of the games about the back three or the back four. So who's running that club, you know? And what I would say is that what United need to do is, yes, build that best-in-class operation, but the next person they need to bring in, I think, is somebody of the stature that there are no Fergusons, but, you know.
But of a Klopp or a Guardiola.
Even
Arteta at Arsenal seems to have more control.
And that was something he accrued over the years, because he started as a head coach.
Yes.
Job title was changed to manager, and Edu was the sporting director there. And while they had a good relationship, it was a case of this house ain't big enough.
And Edu's gone now.
And
still top of the league, probably going to likely to win it.
So, I mean, to me, it's when I hear of the people that Man United are linked with, I'm thinking Man United needs, yes, you know, they need a manager in their absolute prime with a big enough personality to handle the club, with a big enough vision that that everybody within that organization will work to his vision rather than, you know, Jim Ratcliffe getting sent clips of Gary Neville and saying, and forwarding them on, and everybody dancing around, and the manager being undermined, or the head coach being undermined from top to bottom.
I mean, you shouldn't be in a position where you have to manage up to such a degree, and you have the power that you mainly are managing down.
Yeah, I think there's three things to the managerial merry-go-round. I think one, Tommy's hit the nail on the head there. I think there's been a whole power shift, that they move away from this all-powerful, dominant Alex Ferguson type who basically ran the club, and the reversing of that dynamic, where I think the most important person in the club now is a sporting director or the director of football, who tends to be the middleman between the coach and the board, and that's the person who tends to be making all the decisions now. That then would lead you to believe that you need to have the personality type like an Arteta or a Klopp or a Guardiola to be so exceptional that you can handle that kind of power dynamic, and actually almost reverse it, that you become so successful they can't get rid of you anyway, and you are the final arbiter of those major decisions. I think there's a shorter termism as well in football, where people are not being given time. I think there's a huge push, appetite for success. The money is so high and at stake that you aren't given a year or 2 years. You're given weeks, months, sometimes now, and then you're gone. And then thirdly, there's another dynamic, I think, where there's a bit of fan power coming in, and maybe that's linked to the second point, where, as we can see at Celtic, where club can turn kind of toxic based on those previous 2 points, and then the fans turn and it just becomes impossible.
Tottenham Hotspur is not too.
Well, Spurs is a very good example as well. So when it comes to managers, I think an interesting point is, you see it in Ireland, you see it in Manchester United, where they tend to go for the complete opposite of what came before, right? So they'll go for, you know, Amorim, young up and coming European manager. I'll bet you any money this is an established English Premier League person that's coming in who's got credibility, because they go for the complete opposite of what happened before. You went from Staunton to Trapattoni or whatever, and you look at the every time you
Kenny to Hamer.
Yeah, exactly. Every time you go for something completely different the next time because it just didn't work.
So it has to be somebody of stature. I mean, I'm interested in the three managers managing the World Cup that do have stature. Pochettino, Tuchel and Nagelsmann. I mean, you need someone of, I mean, it's Manchester United. They can only
Ancelotti as well. It's the other one that was put in there.
Yeah, well, let's see how Brazil goes.
Yeah.
This is just an amazing story. Macclesfield are 14th in National League North in England. They're a non-league club and they're 2-0 up against Crystal Palace, the holders, in the FA Cup third round. It is just incredible. We're watching this here. Tommy Martin, Mick O'Keefe and myself. Everton, they'll Sunderland won still. Is there a kind of a conclusion about this managerial madness? I mean, Wilfred Nancy, the poor lad, had 33 days at Celtic. Martin O'Neill's back in there. It's almost like he took a holiday to Spain, came back in, and he's sitting in the chair again.
Well, I mean, as Mick says, it's interesting because the United one, I think it's fair to say, I don't think the fan sort of side of it was a big factor. That was literally sort of internal, you know, unhappiness. And,
like,
and
again, 38% win record.
Yeah.
Thing at three at the back where he's, I'm so wedded to this thing, I'm going to go down in flames with him. Yeah, and he did.
He did not make him give himself any favours. No. But, you know, you even trace back that sort of chain of decision making to where, by all accounts, Dan Ashworth, who was hired and then fired at great expense, you know, one of the things he, that caused his demotion and sacking was that he kind of wore, I don't think this Amorim three at the back thing, I don't think this is the guy for us. And obviously Ratcliffe and I think Omar Barada, this new CEO, had come in at that time. We're like, no, you're not on message here. This is the guy. And this was after Ratcliffe had said in one of his early interviews that the style of play will be decided in this room. In other words, we'll have this brains trust, these great minds, you know, Sir Dave Brailsford was involved at the time. And, you know, there was this, you know, Ten Hag's cup final win over Man City. There was a great picture, a great photo from the director's box at Wembley that time where there was about six. And, you know, there was Ratcliffe, there was Barada, there was Wilcox, there was Dan Ashworth. There was a few other guys. There was like six guys in Man United suits and like not sort of like club legends, you know. I mean, Fergie might have been there as well, but there was this whole cast. And I think, you know, I think Dion Fanning christened it a Politburo of Bullshit, you know, which...
Or it might have been Jonathan Wilson,
Whichever. We'll give them both credit.
Yes, exactly.
And, you know, that sort of...
It's a good job, the Man United job, though, now, right now. I think they're in a much better place.
Like,
they're not far off Champions League.
It'll always be a good job because of the money they have.
No, but what I would say
is...
But the players are coming back. Like, actually, if you think the left them in complete disarray.
None of the guys that we're talking about, and the three names you mentioned, I could be wrong, unless they're, you know, just want to get a payday, would put up with any of that nonsense. I really don't think Tuchel would put up with Jason Wilcox calling him into a room and questioning his tactics. Now... Maybe that's healthy, and maybe it was right that it was time for Amorim to go, and maybe they should have just, you know, done it in a more elegant way. But none of those guys would put up with the way that club has been, you know, organised, with Ratcliffe being, you know.
Yeah, it's amazing we haven't even spoken with the Glazers yet. Well, getting away with it.
They're also majority shareholders, like, and then they're just sailing on.
Letting someone else take the dividend.
I think Southgate is... I know people have kind of dismissed him. I wouldn't mind him at all. And Eddie Howe, I know Roy Keane was lobbying for him during
I could understand Eddie Howe.
Very interesting.
Won a trophy and, you know, has brought Newcastle into the
Champions League. Lots of experience.
But Southgate is not a proven club manager for me, I have to say. Proven man of culture.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if you think that United's squad is full of lads who need a culture improvement, but maybe it doesn't. I mean, maybe at Tottenham he could do it.
I was surprised that they didn't bring Southgate in at some stage earlier.
They made a mistake, but given Ten Hag and your deal, they've obviously made a mistake with this new guy, who did so well in Portugal. So it's... I suppose it's
Ralph Rangnick's a genius after all.
Even the way you talk about these decision makers... Is there even faith in them? And that's the issue with
Manchester. Well, I think anybody's going into a club, they're going to need some convincing that these are guys they want to work with. I mean, the Celtic one was interesting because you have that element of fan anger and you know, a lot of the same themes. Like, I mean, it's a completely different situation in that Celtic have been in a position of dominance. I mean, it was last February that they went toe-to-toe with Bayern Munich in the Champions League. You know, and Brendan Rodgers, it was probably his best European performance with the club. And there was a sense that actually, you know, after years of sort of facile kind of domination in Scotland with a kind of an ailing Rangers, that maybe they were making progress in the European front, and the floor completely collapsed. And the fan anger around that is based on just complacency, things being let to sort of
drift, maybe.
Drifts. Yeah. Totally. They were happy to finish 3 points ahead of Rangers. A Rangers has been dysfunctional, you know, for now nearly two decades in terms of like their financial situation. That's coming home to roost for them now. And apparently, at least Celtic had the grace to sack their director of football, the guy who recommended Wilfred Nancy.
Yeah, but I think on the Celtic one, I think Rodgers probably knew he'd gone as far as he could. And when he didn't get the investment or couldn't get the right players, whatever you want to look at it, in the summertime and that early exit from the Champions League, it felt like he was manufacturing an exit for himself anyway. When you're picking her out with the shareholder,
talk about Honda Civics and all this.
Yeah, you're looking for a way out, and he got his way out, and it was fault on both sides there. And I'd say he wanted out. It was the Martin O'Neill thing was the easy break glass, let's go and go back to the nostalgic thing, and he'll steady the ship for a few weeks. Nancy was a terrible appointment. In hindsight, you can't throw a fella, an inexperienced manager like that, in the middle of a season in a totally dysfunctional situation where the crowd have turned, they've banned the Green Brigade, the shareholder AGM was war, and then you throw a young manager in the middle of that. Like, it just, he was never going to succeed.
Yeah, you feel sorry for him.
Your heart goes out to him because he just wasn't able for it.
No.
And now to go back to O'Neill, he'll steady the ship. And look, you know,
his motivational, with Sean Maloney in there as well, they might be able to.
You play 4-4-2 and you've better players than everybody else, but you should win 9 exactly. games out of 10. You know, it's not that hard.
A competent manager wins the Scottish League with Celtic every time. So I think.
Okay, that's a good way to start the chat here. Mick O'Keefe and Tommy Martin reviewing the Sporting Week on the Saturday panel. Just, I mean, there's pre-season competitions. I mean, I don't even know if they're even worth mentioning in Gaelic football, to be honest, or in Ireland, to be honest. Like, I don't like them. But anyway, but the Gaelic season's going to be coming back in the next few weeks in earnest with the leagues. How do we feel Gaelic football is now? I mean, I'm sorry, but Donegal's lost the All-Ireland, Tommy, but.
Just getting over it.
It's, to me, it was a revolutionary year. We had, the three up and the four back, including, you know, with the goalkeeper, obviously, as a roving thing with the new rules. I think the biggest one, obviously, is the two-pointer, the solo go, you know, the I suppose the decrease in descent in the game, the rewarding of high fielding. You play Gaelic football, Mick, for the Dubs. Are there things that you think still need evolving in Gaelic football? I mean, do you think the game is in a fantastic place now, given where it was a year ago?
I think it's been revolutionary, and I think Jim Gavin deserves massive praise for what he did. The game is watchable. I think the rule changes, I thought last year there was too many, and I thought they were too complicated. And my fear was that you can enter St. Anne's Park, how do you referee with one ref, the three in the, keeping three back in the half and all that kind of stuff. It's managed to police itself by and large. I think it's in a fantastic place. Just on the pre-season, just to give a nod there, I was the king of Upburn Cup just before the real competition started when I got dropped. That was usually my Dublin trajectory.
You're the master of the Upburn
Cup. You want to know anything about the Upburn Cup, I am your man, right?
How dare you criticise Mick's Upburn Cup.
The O'Keefe Cup. But there's already an O'Keefe Cup.
There's a Bob O'Keefe Cup. No relation. The rules, I think by and large, most of them have worked. I think they're clever enough to be a work in progress. I would say the 50-yard penalty for the not giving the ball back to the opponent is too grey and too penal. And we've seen teams lose matches of high stakes that they shouldn't have because of a very marginal call. And I think we need to change that and make it more prescriptive for referees, because what happened in the Finbar's Dingle game was really, really harsh. And you could say if a fella's trying to give the ball and he doesn't, to move the ball from the halfway line to 30 yards out in front of the post is game changing, right? And that's what happened in that game. I think that needs to be reviewed. I would argue we need to look at the 4 point for goal. I think teams will start to tweak how they play. The 2 points from the arc is a brilliant invention, because it's
such a huge impact in the final. I mean, Kerry got five, Donegal didn't get any.
It was amazing. And you look at Dublin now, and we can come to them later, but like the lack of a long range kicker, a Paul Mannion and a Brian Fenton type, actually is the difference. And you've got Clifford and other guys from Kerry who can kick the ball comfortably over the bar from 50 yards. Donegal couldn't do it in the final. That was the difference in the teams. I would also add the cynical foul. A cynical foul anywhere on the pitch for me should be a 21-yard free. If you rugby tackle someone, you know, out in their half, it needs to be moved all the way up. I think otherwise, I think they've got it absolutely bang on, much better than I even thought they would. And I think full credit to them. I'll come to the preseason thing in a few minutes, though. But I think hurling is the one now where they're probably going to have to look at a few rule changes or a few tweaks here and there to again kind of keep that game evolving. But it's an evolution, and I think if it was me, I probably would have done it wrong. In hindsight, I would have brought in a few rule changes at a time. I think what they did was
short, sharp,
amazing, and they deserve full credit for it.
As do the units of the association to buy into from a club level.
I just think. I mean, look. I mean, obviously, the second half of the year didn't go so well for Jim Gavin, but that achievement, you know, in terms of organisational change, you know, diagnosing the problem, getting the right people around the table to fix the problem, deciding what to do, and then selling it to people.
And asking people as well.
Yeah.
Before.
The whole process, consultation, implementation, and then the you know, studios like this coming in, going through the questions, explaining. Getting the games televised, you know, the experimental
Sandbox games,
in Croke Park, that whenever that was the November, so people kind of started getting their heads around it, getting the messages out through clubs and county boards, so that you were starting, you know, this time last year with your juvenile teams, you sort of had right, here's what's happening, and it worked a lot better at that level.
And I genuinely thought
that
we may need two sets of rules because they were unimplementable at grassroots, but actually they work.
Oh, and they work brilliantly. You know, I was involved with my son's under 14 team last year, and in terms of the speed, even if it was already evident at the start of the game, the transitional nature of the game, because from the solo and go, lads just weren't being dragged down and freeze. It was just go. Yeah. You know, how that was making lads think quicker, athletically developing them, and then the descent one. You know, the how it cut down on nonsense from the sideline, how it made the process of actually training young players to behave themselves and keep their mouth shut and that sort of thing, that as a coach you're like, just, you know, if you know, don't be mouthing to the ref.
Culture shift.
Yeah, and from, you know, coaches and people on the sideline, lads, if you spot the ref out of it, that's a score for them, because it's a free on the, you know, right in front of the posts, and you've cost us a score. So like the loudmouth mentor was, you know, was chopped down, like.
But fixing football was top five agenda item for the GAA. It was getting to a critical place where the games were getting hard to watch, and it was going all the way down to junior B level, where teams were putting 10 men behind the ball. It was not encouraging the skills of the game. They've managed to do it all. Even the one person for the throw in, like, just small little things have made a massive difference. I think now when you look at it, I think they've fixed football by and large. I think if you're looking to the GAA presidency race this year, you know, the big issues now, yes, they can continue to evolve. I think integration is a massive thing they need to get right. I think the season, I think, isn't right. I think, I know there's many arguments to this and it's a complex one, but having the GAA football championship over by August Bank Holiday weekend is way too early. I think we need to give it oxygen through the summer. And let it run to the last, maybe third weekend in August or something like that. Even if it's at the expense of the My Precious O'Byrne Cup and all those other things, I think fine. And it still gives the clubs enough time on good pitches to get their competitions played. Because it's only two teams ultimately playing in the final. But like, just to give it a little bit more, the GAA is the summer. Intercounty is the selling point. Give it that little bit more time. I think a couple of more weeks. It'd be interesting to see what the GAA, new GAA president's going to do on that. Whether that's going to be an agenda item as well. And protecting the volunteerism and the whole payment issue, I think, is another one as well that GAA need to get right. So there's interesting times for the association itself, but from an organisation perspective, which had been criticised by people for being slow to change, overly democratic.
They showed that they can do it in this area. Why can they not do it in other areas?
If you take a few years ago, John, like, you know, they brought in the sin bin, and, you know, Mickey Hart comes out after the McKenna Cup game and says, like, this isn't going to work, and it's dead. You know, all of a sudden it's gone, you know. So look, hopefully now they get those right, and whoever gets that job has a couple of big ticket things to sort out.
This is the Saturday panel reviewing the Sporting Week with Tommy Martin and Mick O'Keefe. You can WhatsApp us any comments or suggestions or questions. 0879 180 180. Still Macclesfield 2, Crystal Palace 0 in the third round of the FA Cup. They're into the second half there. And Off the Ball Saturday News Talk is back after the news.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball.